Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, VOA reporter Steve Herman is here to tell us the story of the boots he has worn for almost 25 years as he has reported from around the world. These are special boots.
I have worn them for up to 36 hours, and they still felt good. They are the best-fitting boots I have ever owned.
But the boots are in bad condition. Will Steve and his boots have to say goodbye? Longtime VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman visits today on As It Is. People who have to stand for a long time, like soldiers, police officers, and reporters, need strong footwear that also feels good. VOA's Steve Herman has been traveling the world with the same pair of boots for almost 25 years, but he has worn them so much that they may now be unwearable. Can they be saved? Here is Steve Herman to tell us the story of a man and his boots. Steve?
Thanks, Chris. The story begins in Japan and moves to the city of Portland in the northwest American state of Oregon. The city is home of one of the last American shoe factories. The boots that star in this story are known as Danner Lights. I bought them at a store in Tokyo, I think it was in 1991. The boots are leather and can be worn in the water. They keep your feet from getting wet. I have worn them for up to 36 hours, and they still felt good. They are the best-fitting boots I have ever owned. I love my boots. They kept my feet dry as I crossed streams in Sichuan, China. I have worn them in the hot sands of the Middle East. They have been on my feet as I walked through wet, poisonous earth in Bhopal, India. I have worn them as I moved along the icy streets of Seoul, South Korea. They have helped keep me from falling as I looked out the open doors of military helicopters over wars. I have not been hurt in any of my dangerous reporting work while wearing my boots, so I consider them lucky. Recently, I had to decide if I should continue to wear my boots. I had them on my feet during the meltdown at Japan's Fukushima Nuclear Power Center in March 2011. I was close to the center when the tsunami hit and damaged the factory. Then I went to the center to report on the crisis for VOA. I wanted to have the old boots repaired, but I wondered if it was safe to do so. So I asked for help from the National Atomic Testing Museum. They told me to talk with Rolf Sadova, an associate professor of health physics at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He told me that hikers and soldiers often have radioactivity on their shoes. He used a machine called a Geiger counter to measure the radiation level of my boots. The testing took place almost 3 years after I wore them at Fukushima. The counter clicks up to 150 times a minute. The faster the clicking, the more radiation there is.
The frequency of the clicks is increasing as I move it over the toe cap of the boots. So there's definitely something on the tip of these boots on the toe cap that is more radioactive than the normal background. If I go to the back of the boot, you don't hear anything anymore.
More tests in a special container made me feel better about the radiation level of my favorite boots. Professor Sadova found that the small amount of radioactivity wouldn't cause health problems. So I sent them to the place where they were made, the Danner factory in Portland, Oregon. Several hundred pairs of boots are sent to the factory every month to be repaired. Marcy Usselman is the head of the repair department. She told me people love their boots, even if they are not in good condition. She said many owners of the boots are emotionally close to them.
For a police officer, it could be the first pair of boots he had when he began his service. In the Army, they've obviously fought and been standing next to their fellow soldiers, and it means a lot to them.
I discovered that my boots were among the oldest ever sent to the factory to be repaired, and they were among those in the worst condition. Oleg Shishkin was the Danner employee who worked on my boots. He began repairing boots as a teenager in Ukraine, where he was born. His father and grandfather before him also repaired boots. They and Mr. Shishkin are called cobblers. He first tore my boots apart. This was difficult for me to watch. Many years of dirt fell onto his work area. The cobbler then replaced almost every part of the boots, even the laces. The extremely dry leather of my boots had caused problems. I watched a hole appear when Mr. Shishkin removed the old stitching. Mr. Shishkin used tools like pliers and a hammer. The work he does and the kinds of tools he uses are the same a cobbler would do and use hundreds of years ago. But Mr. Shishkin also used more recent technology, an Italian shoe machine. Mr. Shishkin worked on my boots all day and called the repair a success. He compared it to medical treatment.
Surgery is done. Operation is good. Still alive.
How long do you think before they'll need another surgery?
How long are you wearing these shoes?
Already about 23 years.
I think it's same.
Workers still manufacture Danner boots as mine were in the early 1990s. They are handmade. In other words, workers do not use machines except for sewing. Everything is done at the factory, from inspecting the leather to putting on the soles or bottoms of the boots. That is the final step. Most American shoe companies manufacture their products in Asia, where wages are lower. But some, like Danner, still make some or all of their footwear in America. Danner meets congressional requirements that their shoes and boots are American-made using only American products. But the company's staff is international. Only about 12 workers in the factory were born in the United States. There are 87 Vietnamese workers, 14 from Burma, 14 from China, and 9 Somalis. Danner, which was formed in 1932, is not an American-owned company. The company was bought in 2012 by a Japanese group of stores called ABC Mart. It was at one of that company's stores in Tokyo that I bought my boots in the early 1990s. For now, the company mostly sells its shoes and boots to American soldiers, police officers, hunters, hikers, and reporters like me. But the company says it has plans to sell its products to people throughout the world. With my boots on, I'm Steve Herman.
Thanks, Steve. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. I'll be here next week at this same time with another edition of As It Is on the Voice of America.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. New York City and the state of New York are investing hundreds of millions of dollars to become a major player in the development of high-tech industries. They have developed 40 workspaces, known as incubators, to assist startup businesses. Harlem Biospace is an incubator for biomedical engineering. It gives young entrepreneurs a low-cost way to develop their ideas and businesses. For a low monthly payment, they are given desk space and use of a laboratory. The young people pay for their own raw materials.
This is great. The reason is because it's cheap and it has the wet lab that we need. So I order the chemicals that I need and I'm given the facilities here to do my experiments.
Tyler Poor and his partner are developing a product that will kill bacteria. It can be put on household goods like a sponge for cleaning. He and the 17 others at Biospace share a common goal: to find solutions to biomedical problems. Edwin Vasquez is investigating the mystery of diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. He says suggestions from others in the building make the work environment at Biospace a real plus.
And there's nothing better than sit down in a room like this when there's a lot more people around and, you know, you got something that is exciting and you go to the lunch room and you start talking to other of your colleagues. And all of a sudden somebody knows a researcher that is doing something similar to you or that can complement your research, you get in contact and things happen.
Leading hospitals and science centers are supporting inventors like Kate Rocklin, founder of a company called Immunovent. She has developed a brush to test for allergic reactions. The device is placed in the nose or mouth. The test results are correct more often than skin or blood tests.
And from one single sample from the nose or mouth, we can test for a whole panel of 72 allergens. And we found that the blood test identified peanut allergies only 50% of the time, and we could find it 99% of the time. So we're far more accurate for peanut diagnosis, and that's really important because that one in particular is really life-threatening.
Matthew Owens is the executive director of Harlem Biospace. He says there have been real signs of success since the company was launched last November.
We do have companies who are already shipping, getting revenue and getting products out to customers. So I think that's absolutely a success.
And that is the Technology Report from VOA Learning English. Do you have a question or comment about this report? Email us at learningenglish@voanews.com. Or for more news about science and technology, visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com. We're also on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, iTunes, and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm June Sims.
Thank you. from VOA Learning English. Welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. Americans are remembering George Washington this month. February 22nd marks the birthday anniversary of the country's first president. Come celebrate the event with us on a visit to Mount Vernon, Washington's home in Virginia. George Washington lived at Mount Vernon for more than 40 years. The big wooden house is 24 kilometers south of Washington, D.C., the city named in his honor. But the distance from the city does not stop people from all over the world from visiting the home. The property can be reached by bicycle, car, bus, even by boat on the Potomac River. George Washington was born on February 11th, 1731. His birth date moved up a year and 11 days when the Gregorian calendar was accepted. Before Washington was elected president, he commanded the troops that won the Revolutionary War against Britain. He helped to set up the country now called the United States of America. Some historians say the nation would not exist if George Washington had never lived. Washington helped choose where to build the capital city and an official home for the president. Yet, he is the only president who never lived in the White House. It was completed after he left office. Washington lived in New York and later in Philadelphia while he served as president. But Mount Vernon was always important to him, and the house he shared with his wife Martha remains an important place in American history. George Washington's father, Augustine, started building the house in 1735. Later, the home and farm were named Mount Vernon. At that time, George Washington's half-brother Lawrence owned the property. Lawrence Washington died in 1752. George Washington took possession of Mount Vernon in 1754. During the next 45 years, he continually added to it. The main building grew to its present size of 21 rooms. He watched over the additions even while he was away at war. Today, the house and property still look like a Virginia plantation, a working farm where crops are grown. But present-day Mount Vernon has been made more meaningful to visitors through many creative displays. A hands-on history center offers special activities for children aged 3 to 8. Visitors can begin their trip to Mount Vernon with a stop at the Ford Orientation Center. A film called We Fight to Be Free tells about Washington both as a man and as a military leader. The movie shows the future president commanding British forces during the French and Indian War, which ended in 1763. Washington also led a small army across the icy Delaware River on December 25, 1776. By that time, the American colonies were fighting for independence from Britain. Washington's colonial forces were on their way to fight the Battle of Trenton in New Jersey. The colonial forces faced and defeated Hessian troops at Trenton. The Hessians were fighting on the British side. Many were captured. and the colonial losses were few. Winning the battle marked the turning point of the American Revolution. The film also tells about Washington's life in more peaceful times, like his first meeting with his future wife, Martha Custis. Her first husband had died and left her with four children. George and Martha Washington took the two youngest and raised them at Mount Vernon as their children. The public loved George Washington for his service to the country. Some people wanted him to be president for life. But Washington said Americans had fought for freedom from such rulers. He was elected president two times without opposition. He was offered a third term, but he refused. Washington said he wanted to return to the life he had led at Mount Vernon before the war. And that is what he did. The former president returned to Mount Vernon. During those last years, he led the life of a rich farmer. He directed the work of five farms. George and Martha Washington often invited friends to eat in the dining room at Mount Vernon. They also provided food and a place to sleep for travelers. Very few hotels existed then, so the Washingtons offered a place to stay to about 600 people a year. Many were strangers. George Washington was able to enjoy retirement at Mount Vernon for less than 3 years. In December of 1799, the former president became sick and died. He was 67 years old. Modern doctors believe the cause of death was a severe infection. Many people mourned. They felt a terrible loss at the death of their Revolutionary War hero and first president. More than 700 speakers throughout the country honored him. Towns and villages held funeral marches. Businesses closed for days. Bells rang and rang. Now that we know more about George Washington's life, we will continue with our visit to his Mount Vernon home. The property contains the family's main house and smaller buildings. Visitors also see farming areas, nature paths, and, when in season, beautiful flower gardens. A green hillside leads down to the Potomac River. A guide suggests going into the main house. It is 3 floors high. Washington was responsible for much of its design. Today, the mansion has been restored to recapture the past. Step into the central passage, and you'll find yourself in the world of 1799. The central passage provides an entrance to the house. But it is more. It was a place for welcoming and entertaining visitors. A guide tells us that during summer months, the family gathered near the open doors in the hope of catching some cool air. George Washington's office is on the ground level. It contains many of his books. This is the room where Washington planned the farm activities on his land. It is also where he wrote to other leaders. One writer called this room the center of political intelligence for the New World. Another guide leads visitors up some steps.
Mount Vernon has 8 bedrooms. George and Martha Washington needed all these bedrooms for their many visitors. High above is a cupola, a small structure with windows on all sides. Washington designed this so that hot summer air would escape from inside the house. African slaves were responsible for a great amount of work at Mount Vernon. More than 300 slaves lived and worked on the property. Slaves and some paid workers operated George Washington's 5 farms. Together, the farms covered more than 1,000 hectares. Other slaves built houses and furniture. Still others cooked and performed housekeeping duties. Visitors can see the burial places of slaves at Mount Vernon. The cemetery holds the remains of slaves and free black people who worked on the property during the 1700s and the first half of the 1800s. Their final resting places are not marked. Many years after the birth of the new country, America's 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. The measure ended slavery in southern states, including Virginia. Lincoln's action in 1863 was widely criticized as well as praised. Even in Washington's time, there was great debate about slavery. Washington came to disapprove of slavery as he grew older. He was the only one of the men known as the founding fathers of the country to free his slaves. He ordered that his slaves be freed after he and his wife died. Older slaves received payments for years after that. Much is said about George Washington, the hero, but there is also the argument today that not enough is said about Washington, the slave owner. After George and Martha Washington died, Mount Vernon was given to other family members. By the 1850s, the individual who owned Mount Vernon did not have enough money to keep it in good condition. He offered to sell it to Virginia or to the federal government. Both said no. That is when a private group rescued the home. The Mount Vernon Ladies Association bought the property with money it collected. If you cannot visit Mount Vernon in person, you can explore it online. Go to the website www.mountvernon.org. It lets you visit the world of a man who helped to build a new nation. And for pictures of Mount Vernon, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Our program was written by Geraldine Watson, and I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for another This is America program from VOA Learning English.